more American military aid for Ukraine.
It also includes high-tech systems to detect and counter drones. Also more Humvees, generators, and other combat equipment.
Plus, Sweden and Finland are looking to join NATO.
High-level diplomacy is ongoing, as both Finland and Sweden have warned that time is of the essence, because Russian President Vladimir Putin's aggression is unpredictable.
And later in the program, we'll learn about a new effort to demonize Ukrainian refugees in Europe. Today is Friday, December 9th. From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. The Biden administration is expected to announce a new round of military aid for Ukraine. What's included? The AP's Ben Thomas has the story.
U.S. officials tell the AP the latest package includes large amounts of ammunition, 80,000 rounds for howitzers, and an undisclosed amount for the High Mobility Artillery Rocket System, known as HIMARS. It also includes high-tech systems to detect and counter drones. Also more Humvees, generators, and other combat equipment. In all, it's about $275 million worth, smaller than most of the recent packages the U.S. has delivered, but it comes as many military officials and experts predict a reduction in attacks over the winter. NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says Russia appears to be slowing military activities to regroup for a new offensive when the weather warms. Ben Thomas, Washington.
From military aid, we turn to financial aid. On Thursday, the Ukrainian finance minister said that supporting Ukraine financially is not charity because it enables the country to protect freedom for the world. Sergei Marchenko said the damage from Russian attacks on civilian infrastructure would cost 0.5% of the country's annual economic output next year, as Ukraine tries to cover a budget deficit equivalent to $38 billion U.S. dollars. Not surprisingly, Marchenko blames Russia and is suggesting the cost to support Ukraine is minor when compared to other costs that developed nations have shared in the past, including the coronavirus and the 2008 economic crisis.
The problem which Russia created for all civilized wars and the price which other countries pay supporting Ukraine is incomparable. To cure this disease is to help Ukraine to win this war.
The $18 billion in loans proposed by the EU's Executive Commission, along with continued U.S. support and possible help from the International Monetary Fund, has been blocked by Hungary over its disputes with Brussels related to concern over the rule of law. Developing story now from Moscow. One of Vladimir Putin's most outspoken critics and one of the few to remain in Russia, Ilya Yashin, has been sentenced to 8.5 years in prison. For more context on the situation, I spoke with Rafael Sakhov of VOA's Russian service. We started with some background information on just who Ilya Yashin is.
Ilya Yashin, although he's 39 years old, is really a longtime critic of Kremlin and Vladimir Putin personally. As a political activist in the early 2000s, he became a head of the youth wing of the Yabloko party that has been one of the biggest opposition forces at that time. I remember it good because I'm the same age as him and I was a student that time. After that, Yashin became the closest ally of Boris Nemtsov, one of Russia's opposition leaders who has been brutally killed in 2015 on a bridge in Moscow just near the Kremlin. And Yashin is also one of the closest allies of Alexei Navalny, sentenced in Russia earlier. And since the full-scale war began, Yashin was one of only few current opposition leaders who decided not to leave the country while continuing his critics of the regime and of its war, calling it a war and not a military operation, so-called, as Russian authorities demand.
So from what you're saying, I gather he was somebody who was well known to the Russian public. How is his sentence being seen in Russia by, not by the government, but by regular ordinary citizens?
From what we hear from the reaction, at least in social media, because you know that now in Russia, people are afraid of, publicly appeal to the government to write something, because can also be considered, you know, a criminal offense under recently introduced the legislation, which considers discrediting the Russian armed forces to be illegal. And that's what happened to Yashin, because on his YouTube channel, which became very popular, in one of his streams, he was reporting on Russian army's atrocities in the Ukrainian city of Bucha near Kyiv. And during the video, he condemned the war crimes of Russian army and shared images, stories from the scene by the BBC and other media companies, comparing those images to the Russia's defense ministry press releases, which have been showing really completely different picture. So, of course, inside Russian opposition, among Russian people who are critically, you know, against the Kremlin, there are no doubts that this is another politically motivated attack on critical voices inside the country.
It kind of does look like Putin here is trying to silence opposition. Is there any opposition movement left in Russia?
So you see, what Putin tried to do, he's not silencing right now. He began silencing at least starting from 2011, 2012, when there was this huge mass protest in Russia, in Moscow and other cities. So we can now see that it's a 10 years result of Putin's, steps to silence Russian opposition. And of course, killing Boris Nemtsov in 2015 was a key step in this movement of Putin. Because, by the way, Boris Nemtsov was the only person who could, you know, unite Russian opposition, because Russian opposition is really different. People from different views, you know, but they all are against Putin. And Boris Nemtsov was the key figure. And then, of course, Alexei Navalny became the key figure. Then Alexei Navalny was sentenced, and then Ilya Yashin became the key figure. So now he's also in jail. And Andrei Pivovarov, Vladimir Karamurza, they are all in jail. So for now, we can really say that it's almost there is no leader left. So people, there are just, small groups from former Navalny, campaign, so who are left in Russia, who are still there. But of course, most of the political, most of real activists, I mean, the most prominent ones, they have already left or they have been jailed.
Rafael Sakov of VOA's Russian service. Rafael, thank you so much for your time and helping give us some context to today's headlines.
Happy to do it. Always welcome.
So it's time now to check in with our Kyiv reporter, Anna Chernikova. Anna is not in Kyiv today, though. Anna, can you tell us where you are, what you're doing there, and how it is?
Today I was visiting, I'm not going to mention the exact location for security reasons, but today I was visiting a part of the border of Ukraine with Belarus. And checking on the situation there and how Ukrainian forces are actually prepared and getting ready to defend in case it would be needed. And we hear about Moscow and Minsk signing new agreements about connecting to military activities and defense. So, and also we see and we hear about Belarus and Russian forces getting trainings to as so-called training for anti-terrorist actions, anti-terroristic operation training. So basically this tension is growing, and the question of if Belarus would actually, enter this war physically is actually in the air now. So this was one of the reasons why we were visiting the border today and talking to Ukrainian soldiers, asking them about situation, watching what's happening at the border. And we had also a chance to see the training and preparation of Ukrainian forces.
And among the soldiers you met, what is the morale like? How's their attitude?
Oh, well, they're ready to fight. I mean, they are standing there for quite a long time now. And, you know, this tensions that is creating time to time, because we see that like 1 month it could be like no information and no talks about Belarus escalating and Belarus entering the war physically, right, with their armed forces. And then next month, the talks started and, tension increases. So these soldiers are actually pretty much ready to fight. So I should say morale is very, very high.
I know you've been traveling and working on some other tasks. Have you been able to ascertain what's going on elsewhere in the country? Is there a frontline update from the east or from the south?
Well, actually, in terms of frontline updates, situation remains more or less similar to previous days. So we still hear about very heavy fighting around Bakhmut in the Donetsk region. And of course, you know, I mean, situation is changing there, you know, every hour, but nothing big is happening. So for the moment, Ukrainians just keep their positions and defend while Russians are trying to advance and also keeping their positions in around Bakhmut.
Anna, we've been seeing reports that Russian forces are stationing missiles or large guns or something to that effect near the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant so that Ukrainian forces can't bomb them. Is that something you've heard about?
Well, we hear, you know, we don't hear some specifically official information about that. However, we hear talks about this, and we hear that actually Russian forces, and this is something that Ukrainian officials were saying, that Russian forces actually bring more and more equipment to the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. What we're also hearing from Energoatom, according to them, Russian forces beat two Ukrainian workers of the plant and then took them somewhere to the unknown direction. And also they said that one of the workers who is the head of certain sector of the nuclear power plant was kind of like arrested, put into the you know, separate place within the plant by Russian forces. So, but again, we cannot confirm or verify this information independently. This is just what we're hearing from Ukrainian side.
Anna Chernikova, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. In a few moments, we'll find out about a new campaign aimed at building resentment and hatred towards refugees. First, though, Secretary of State Antony Blinken welcomed his Swedish and Finnish counterparts to the State Department on Thursday. The U.S. is in strong support of the two countries' respective bids to join NATO in response to Russia's war on Ukraine. But despite recent proclamations of unity and standing up to Russia, NATO member Turkey is still blocking Sweden and Finland's membership by not ratifying the required protocols. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken has welcomed his Swedish and Finnish counterparts to the State Department, where the top issue was both countries' applications to join NATO. The two countries have a long history of military non-alignment, but that changed after Russia invaded Ukraine last February. Blinken said Sweden and Finland share NATO's values and are already integrating into the alliance while they are waiting on approval from all 30 NATO countries. The holdup on their accession has been Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who accuses Sweden of being a haven for terrorists. Blinken said efforts to resolve the stumbling blocks are ongoing.
Turkey has raised important security concerns in this process, and the process is being used effectively and productively to address those concerns. And I won't speak for either of my colleagues on that, except to say, as we've observed it, what both countries have done in engaging with Turkey and with NATO itself has been to address those concerns in tangible ways.
Blinken said he is confident that NATO will soon be able to welcome Finland and Sweden as members. But Finnish Foreign Minister Pekka Haavisto expressed concern that Turkey has yet to set a date for their parliament to ratify the accession.
Of course, what we are still missing is the clear date and clear plan of the Turkish parliament to deal with this issue. And we know that Turkey is going to the elections. Of course, our hope is that this decision should come from Turkey rather sooner than later.
Turkey is expected to hold elections next May or June.
Last month, Sweden's parliament passed a constitutional amendment that will make it possible to pass tougher anti-terror laws, a key demand from Turkey to approve Stockholm's NATO membership bid. Experts say the new legislation will make it easier to prosecute members of the Kurdistan Workers' Party, or PKK, blacklisted by Ankara and most of its Western allies. High-level diplomacy is ongoing, as both Finland and Sweden have warned that time is of the essence, because Russian President Vladimir Putin's aggression is unpredictable. Russia's foreign ministry has warned that it would view Finland or Sweden joining NATO as a threat to its security and would respond. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
On the subject of diplomacy, my colleagues at Alhura TV spoke with Ambassador Michael Carpenter. He's the permanent representative of the United States to the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, the OSCE. On the topics of peace talks between Russia and Ukraine, here's what he had to say.
The efforts that have to be made to convince Russia to stop launching this war. Remember, Ukraine is an innocent, peaceful country that did absolutely nothing to Russia. In fact, here at the OSCE, in early January and February of this year, we proposed to Russia a renewed European security dialogue to discuss all of the alleged concerns that Russia expressed about its security. And Russia refused to engage in that dialogue. It refused to discuss de-escalation. Instead, it launched a vicious and brutal war against Ukraine that sees every day new instances of rape, of torture, of mutilation, of harm to civilians, of extrajudicial killing. Circumstances, what sort of negotiation can you talk about? We are waiting for Russia to find the opportunity to de-escalate this conflict, but it's up to them. The ball is in President Putin's court. He started this war, and he could stop it this very minute if he wanted to.
For his part, Vladimir Putin sees the West as culpable.
The potential for conflict in the world is growing, and this is a direct consequence of the attempts by Western elites to preserve their political, financial, military, and ideological dominance by any means. They deliberately ratchet up the level of chaos and aggravate the international situation.
That's Vladimir Putin speaking in a video message to a summit of defense ministers from the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and a group of ex-Soviet countries. It was published by the Kremlin. Researchers are seeing an increase of disinformation made to dehumanize Ukrainian refugees in Europe. I spoke with Will Oremus, who wrote about the subject recently for The Washington Post.
Can you tell us what you're seeing with regards to disinformation? Where is it and where is it coming from?
Since about April, early in the war, disinformation coming from Russia in Europe has focused increasingly on Ukrainian refugees. In particular, it's trying to convince Europeans in countries like Germany and Poland that have taken in a lot of Ukrainians from the country, that those Ukrainians are bad for their country, that they are stealing from the grocery store, that they're buying up all the bus passes, that they're accidentally burning down Germans' houses, and just in general sort of causing havoc and ruining the character of the place.
Now let's make sure we kind of both understand what we're talking about. What is disinformation?
That's a great question, and I'm glad you asked. So misinformation is a very broad term for information that's false. Disinformation is information that is deliberately false. It's intended to mislead. And when we talk about disinformation, we're often talking about coordinated campaigns where some sort of actor, whether it be a national government or a private company, they'll often hire a firm or hire freelancers who set up fake accounts and create false news stories and draw up memes that aren't true and then work to spread those around in order to mislead people.
So in Europe now, we're seeing a coordinated effort of this disinformation demonizing Ukrainian refugees.
It's important to note that the researchers that I've talked to about this have not pinned down exactly who is responsible. Now, they do know that a lot of it is coming from within Russia. So, for instance, the nonprofit Institute for Strategic Dialogue, which is based in London but has offices in Germany and elsewhere around the world, found a series of Telegram channels that are in the German language. They appear to be aimed at a German audience. One that they looked at even had a German flag. It was called Deutsche Wahrheit or German Truth. But the files that are uploaded to those Telegram channels, some of the videos that are spread by those Telegram channels, the metadata is in Russian. And in fact, this research group found that those file names and folder names matched the file names and folder names of other Russian accounts that were sort of known to be Russian. So we know that these are Russian accounts posing as German, speaking in German to Germans, and trying to convince Germans that Ukrainians are bad for them.
And why do you think the Russians would want to convince the German citizens not to like Ukrainian refugees?
So we can only infer the goals of this campaign from the substance of it. But it's pretty clear that the fake videos, fake news stories that are part of this campaign are aimed at making Ukrainians just sort of seem like bad people. Well, now, why would that help Russia? Well, you know, Russian shelling continues to send more and more Ukrainians fleeing to neighboring European countries at a time when those European countries are under a lot of pressure. And one of the reasons they're under pressure is because of the sanctions on Russia. So Germany, as we know, is heavily dependent on Russia for its energy. The sanctions on Russia have sent energy prices spiraling in Germany. It's caused rampant inflation. At last count, I think it was over 11% inflation in Germany. There are fears of a recession. Now, through all that, Germany as a country has remained steadfast in its support of Ukraine. It's a critical ally of Ukraine. But if a growing number of Germans start to think that Ukrainians aren't worth all that, that Ukrainians are maybe the reason for they're losing their jobs, the reason stuff is so expensive at the supermarket, and on top of that, they're not even nice people, you know, then all of a sudden, the support for Ukraine might start to crumble a little bit. And in fact, we're already seeing it becoming a little bit of a partisan issue where people on the German right are saying, hey, why are we doing all this for these Ukrainians? We should be prioritizing Germans first and not spending all these resources on Ukraine.
So there are, let's use Germany as an example, there are real divisions, real issues in the German society, and it seems like these Russian actors are using the issue of the Ukrainian refugees to further divide the German population.
That's exactly right. This is a classic characteristic of Russian disinfo campaigns. We saw it in the United States ahead of the 2016 election, where Russia played on real existing divisions in American society to spread information that it knew would turn Americans against each other. Spread stuff on Facebook that would make us mad at each other, think the other side was not just wrong but evil, or part of a conspiracy to ruin the country. That's what they're doing in Germany in many ways.
Is it working?
Yes and no. The majority of Germans, as well as the majority of Poles, I've talked a lot about Germany because that's where some of the research comes from, but this has also happening in Poland and Czechia, which are two other countries that have taken in a significant number of Ukrainian refugees. The majority in all of those countries still support taking in refugees from Ukraine. They still believe their country should remain an ally of Ukraine, but those numbers have dipped. Those numbers have dipped from the mid-80s in percentile, so like 86% in Germany in March, down to 74% now. And we see similar dips in Poland and Czechia.
That's Willow Remus of The Washington Post. And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Just visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America, Washington, D.C.